This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome back. We are at the top of the hour, Food for Thought with Carol and Tracy. We are live at the Beacon Building, 814 Elm Street, right in downtown Manchester. Today is the world's biggest taco tour going on in Manchester tonight from 4 to 9. And the weather looks beautiful out there, so, I mean, come on down. You'll see lines, but they go real quickly. You don't need any tickets. You can just park and walk Elm Street and all the extensions off of Elm Street, and all the restaurants will be serving all kinds of different tacos. And we are now, the studio's been like crazy.
The fullest I think it's ever been.
Even
a lot of people
is
today.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's been like crazy.
I love the energy.
We even were out of a segment, which was different.
Food for Thought with Carol and Tracy, and Carol were Tracy. We're not in the room.
That
it was too crowded.
Cool. Our next guest is Jeff and Bruce. They are owners of Colby Hill Inn over in Henniker. And I can't wait to hear their story. Their restaurant there is called The Grazing Room, which I love that name.
So yeah, I do too.
Yeah. So yeah. Welcome to Food for Thought. We're so glad
that
you're here with us.
Thank you.
And so I know we chatted a little bit before, which we don't usually like to do. Steve did that.
Sorry. I always do that.
So where do you come from? Tell us your story about how you got to Colby Hill Inn.
I'm Jeff. I'm originally from Pennsylvania. I came to D.C. right out of college in 91, so I've been there since, working mostly in nonprofits. I used to own a natural food store, and Bruce came a little later.
Yeah, I'm actually originally from New York City, and then I had a couple of private restaurants there at one point in time in a former life in the West Village, and then went corporate and was transferred down to Washington, D.C., where I was my last incarnation down there. I was the senior executive chef at the World Bank for almost 9 years.
Wow.
So
that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of a big.
Yeah, probably just a little bit.
So it's kind of a big change. But Jeff and I were at that point in our lives where it's like we both have some entrepreneurial spirit, you know, and it was like we're getting a little up there, and it was like if we do it now or when we still have energy.
So how did the two of you meet?
We actually met in Washington, D.C. Yeah.
Yeah, we met on Match.com, actually, in 2007. And
that's awesome.
We got married.
We're one of their success stories.
Wow. You guys should 10 years. Have a TV show just for that.
We got married in 2009. Actually, Cape Cod was one of our favorite places to come to. We were married in Provincetown. And we looked around D.C. initially, around the Chesapeake Bay Area for an inn, or in Maryland near some farmland. In case one of us had to keep our jobs in doing this, but we couldn't find any place around there. And then this area just kept tugging at us, and we reached out to some B&B team who were brokers and former inn owners. And we started looking at New England, and New Hampshire was not on our radar, but we were very surprised to find, you know, the inn that met really all of our goals.
Met all of our goals. Yeah,
it was beautiful.
Yeah, and it was, you know, I hate to say, not to poo-poo Vermont, but it was just like we didn't want to be the quintessential move to Vermont, open an inn, and you know, sell your life. So we did it with New Hampshire. And one thing that really was attractive for us for New Hampshire is, and especially for Henniker, was that it had, Colby Hill had everything we wanted. It had 14 rooms. There's a big, glorious barn that we're recently renovating right now for weddings and for events. And it had a functioning restaurant. So it kind of met all of our standards.
And I didn't realize it had 14 rooms. That's
big. No, it's really big. It's nice. And it's situated on 5 acres. And the thing, too, is that we're, you know, what was great about it is we're 90 minutes from Boston. We're 45 minutes from Manchester. We're, you know, 30 minutes from Concord. And, you know, there's a great new movement in New Hampshire. New Hampshire's been a little bit behind in the farm-to-table thing. I mean, it's been growing and growing for years, but it's not, we were able to kind of get, I don't want to say the ground, you know, of it, but you know, we're there in kind of the beginning, and we're trying to make our mark in the farm to table movement. It's very important for us. We actually took the inn because we want to really make it a dining destination. We have our tagline, it's an eco country retreat, you know. So we're trying to do a lot of green renovations with that. And along that, you know, translating that into the kitchen there, it's a farm-to-table driven. I'm working with about 15 farms from New Hampshire. Yeah. So it's that's been very important.
In January, we were certified as a local restaurant by the New Hampshire Farm to Restaurant Network or Connection. And we were actually certified at the gold level. We were one of three restaurants in the state at the gold level certification. So wow. That was really exciting. Yeah. No, actually, it didn't happen in January. It happened on February 1st on our first year anniversary. Yeah. So that was even more exciting.
That is exciting. Yeah. So it's been, so this year was a year for you since you guys
Since February 3rd. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been great.
And Henniker's the only Henniker on earth.
I know. It's the only Henniker. It's been, and Henniker's an awesome community. You know, the town's been very welcoming.
I used to live in Warner. So
oh, really? Yeah, it's been a great experience for us, really. And you know, being able to actually go out and go to the farms and talk with the farmers and bring the produce back is something that's really, really important to me. To know where the food's coming from and actually maybe even educate farmers on what restaurateurs or chefs like myself are actually looking for. You know, I have a great story about the one gentleman we're getting the chickens from, and we started talking about getting chickens for the restaurant from him, and I ordered some chickens, and he came in, and they were like the size of turkeys. They were about, literally, they were like 10 pounds each. I was like, I don't know what to do with these. So, but I've been working with him over the past year. I mean, he looked at me cross-eyed when I said, you know, maybe, how about a chicken that's about 2.5 pounds? You got to think center of the plate, you know, something that I can work with.
What was he feeding
there.
Them?
I know.
You know, so.
We were actually out plowing our own gardens this week, too, and then New England College is right down the street from us, and one of the professors there, her name is Sachi Howard, she is taking on a cultivation program with students. And
it's a permaculture.
Yeah, and she's actually really excited about working with us and planning things that we need for the restaurant.
Yeah,
so really getting the community involved.
Yeah, and we're going to be working with NEC. It's actually going to be a project with the, where the students are going to be learning gardening techniques from Sachi. She's a master gardener. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be actually, and it's going to be organic, sustainable farming. So we'll be actually using her produce along with some of the other local farmers and our own produce throughout the upcoming harvest season. So it's very exciting.
How many seats at the restaurant?
We have 55. We seat 50 up to 55. We're going to try and expand it a little bit when we get the barn renovated a little bit more. And then also we have some outdoor dining as well.
And for those of you just tuning in, you are listening to The Pulse, Food for Thought with Carol and Tracy. We are live. We are talking with Colby Hill Inn, the two owners, Jeff and Bruce. And tell us a little bit about the menu.
Well, the menu is kind of eclectic. I mean, it's based on I've always been very much into global cooking. Ever since I started cooking, I was always into different cultures, and that got ingrained in me working at the World Bank for 9 years, where I was learning Malaysian cuisine, you know, Turkmenistan. I mean, all different types of cuisine. And so that's kind of being transposed into our menu a little bit. It is, like I said, it's farm-to-table driven. We're using a lot of organic produce as well. But you'll see different types of the menu changes almost weekly, depending on availability.
Okay.
But you'll see maybe there would be a Portuguese-style cod on one day, and then I just recently did like a Moroccan, braised Moroccan lamb shank with couscous.
Mm.
And
the only dish that's been on the menu since day one, well, two dishes, or three actually, are our cheese plate nibble. We have sections. We have a feasting section, which is our entrees. We have a nibble section, which is like heavier appetizers. And then we have a grazing section, which is our salads and indulge for desserts. So we have this really nice farm-to-table cheese plate, which has been on since day one, as well as buttermilk fried chicken, which Bruce pairs with a seasonal waffle. Sometimes it's pumpkin, in the summertime it's zucchini. And one other thing, the pot of mussels.
Yeah, zucchini thyme or zucchini basil waffle. We've been doing that. But we're also experimenting out now with some new dishes. We're going to be smoking our own chicken, and we're working with a slow roasted smoked chicken right now. So just kind of playing.
So what are the hours of the grazing room?
We're open Wednesday through Sunday for dinner. It's from 5:30 to 8 o'clock Wednesday to Friday, right? And then we just changed our hours. We're opening at 5 o'clock for dinner on Saturdays and Sundays, and then we're open for brunch. We just recently opened for brunch, which we're very happy about, and we serve brunch every Sunday to the public from 10:30 until 2:30 p.m.
Mother's Day, we have a very special brunch.
I was just going to ask about that.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
And the menu's online at colbyhillin.com under the dining section. The Mother's Day brunch, three-course brunch for $40 for adults and some near half price for kids.
Yep.
And seating's from 11 to 3:30. And we're really excited about the menu. I think Bruce did a really good job
at bringing some unique
higher-end brunch items. And it should be a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun with our brunches.
I think you'll do really good at brunch. You know, brunch, you know, especially like on a Sunday, talk about a destination, you know, get in the car and...
Yeah,
you know,
and of course we have four baby goats, which that's like the first thing or last thing people want to do when they come to dine with us is see the goats.
Yeah, they're amazing. But yeah, no, they're
goats
really...
are fun. I used to live in Warner, like I said, and my son Tyler, he's 22 now. He had goats and sheep and chickens and rabbits and rabbits and rabbits and rabbits. That really does happen with rabbits.
Yeah, well, these the goats have been a great kind of marketing tool for us, but we're also going to be using them this fall. We'll be actually breeding them. I'm working with a woman up in Lebanon, and we'll be using their milk for cheese and yogurt at the inn, although I have to figure out how I'm going to be milking these girls twice every 12 hours, amongst other things of being the chef, the plumber, the electrician, you know, other things that come along with owning
a inn. Well, you may need to hire some.
I was going to say, hire a milker.
Yeah. Everyone asks us why we brought in goats, and because we have some artwork, too, with goats. It wasn't about goats necessarily, but we were trying to strengthen the image of the inn as a country inn. And we have these great barns, we have 5 acres, but we didn't have farm animals. And we now have our own organic gardens, too, pretty good size. And we just put in some heirloom apple trees. So we're excited about the shape of the property as it is now.
Yeah.
Now, I saw something about corporate events on your website. Tell us a little bit about your space for that.
One of our dining rooms can close off as a private space, a meeting space for corporations or for, you know, rehearsal dinner or a private party, too. And actually, we have one ongoing company that comes. It's a group of nonprofits or actually museum directors that come once every 2 to 3 months. And they found us because they put a pin in the middle of New England and found Henniker, New Hampshire. And this was a few years ago. But we're a great location for central meeting for people or for companies from, you know, as nearby as Concord or Manchester who just need to get that little escape.
Yeah.
Since we do have the rooms, it's nice for an overnight stay, but a lot of people just come for breakfast and lunch and extend it into the afternoon.
How many people will it seat?
26.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as a farm-to-table and eclectic background, do you know what you're cooking this week, or do you... It comes in Wednesday at 12, and
unfortunately, I've been trying to be a little bit more proactive with the menus, but it's my OCD and ADHD. You know,
those?
I have no idea. it's also like working with kind of the plethora of what I'm getting. I get excited about, you know, a farmer will call me and say, you know, we have this coming in this week. You know, would you like to use it? So I do change the menu up almost weekly. We do have the base core menu as we were talking about. And I will try to run things out for a month, but you know, I'm actually working now with a fishmonger, who actually will go to Portsmouth and go to the docks there and go to the docks in Boston and actually get me, you know, he'll be like, I have this wicked cod, you got to get it. It's, you know,
are you making fun of the Mainas?
Oh, no. it does change. And we just recommend people check the website, you know, before you come in. And also, I like feedback from our customers too, what they're looking for as well.
I mean, two things I want to add about the menu, maybe. We just brought in a sous chef, who has a pastry background, and prior to his coming, we wanted to work more with smaller scale desserts so that people could have their dessert and indulge, but not necessarily feel like they were cheating on their diet. So we've been working with some really fun smaller desserts, doing a lot of duos and trios.
I like that.
Yeah, I do too.
Justin just brought in nitrogen. We're doing liquid nitrogen
ice cream.
So
ice cream.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, no, it's been pretty cool.
So we did a trio of house-made ice creams. It was a key lime, a red wine, and a chocolate goat cheese ice cream trio, each one in a sandwich with a meringue.
Meringue sandwich, yeah. Those are great.
It was really nice.
Have you met Chef Chris Noble?
I know the name. I have not met him yet, personally.
He does all kinds of stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I'm just, crazy. I'm kind of a little old school, so I'm just getting into this, bringing in the younger chefs. But, I mean, I've always wanted to get into the molecular gastronomy, I guess as they call it. So, I mean, I still kind of am more of a traditionalist chef, you know, but some of the things are fun. Some of the other things, you know, it's like, can be a little unrecognizable to me, so I'm, you know, veer away from that sometimes, you know. But
so, are you going to be doing maybe like some farm to table, you know, dinners? That's really popular right now.
Well, actually, that's a good point. I mean, it's, every night though at the inn is farm to table. But specifically
but
featuring
like
farms.
I mean, there's lots of restaurants that do that as well, farm to table. But
yeah,
they'll have like events.
Yeah, no, that is something we've been considering to do.
We've tried some events, but we found that one time event, we really need to build like a collaboration with other organizations or groups to bring the people in, because otherwise it's really costly to advertise and you don't necessarily get a lot of showing for a one time event. But we decided to focus on monthly wine dinners. And we started in Henniger because we have the wonderful Henniger Brewing Company. We started with, back in October, we did a beer pairing dinner. And that was kind of the start to launch off for our wine tour of the world. And we started with France, and we've been going slowly around the world each month. The next one's coming up May 18th. And we're really excited about this one because rather than doing a region, we're focusing on one specific vineyard from Uruguay. The vineyard is actually on a U.S. tour, and one of our distributors has worked with them to bring them into the Colby Hoin for that night.
Well, that's one of the things too we're trying to do at the inn is our wine list. I mean, of course, we inherited this wine list, and everything was California. And there's a world of wine out there, and being into the global cuisine, I'm also into global wines, and we've been trying to manipulate our wine list to reflect that. So you'll actually come into our restaurant night. We have wines from Sardinia, we have Hungarian Tokais, we have a great selection of Austrian wines. Austria is like one of the little countries that just is overlooked when you think about wines. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks they're really sweet and, you know, not drinkable, but there's some amazing rosés and Pinot Noirs coming out from there right now.
Some great finds from Lebanon and from Sardinia.
Sardinia, and then the reason we're featuring the Uruguay. I mean, a lot of people don't think of wines from Uruguay, you know, and so we have this one, and his wines are really actually pretty amazing. So. So what we do with our wine dinners is we kind of pair them up with the region, and I pair the food up. So we'll be doing some Uruguayan dishes with the wine dinner and then some South American dishes as well.
And it's really nice. We're trying to create a community. We do one seating for the wine dinners. We start out in the parlor of the inn, and we find the same people coming back each month now, which is really cool. And we've grown to, because of their comfort with each other and the fact that they actually enjoy each other's company, we've made a communal table, and we had like 30 people last month at one big table, which was
really fun. I really like that.
Yeah.
So and they can get all the information right on your website. I just looked it up.
Get all the information and don't be intimidated by it. I mean, it's fun. It's a great night.
We started back in January a frequent diners club, and we have over, I think, 60 couples now signed up. So we're trying to get to know our diners. Colby Hill Inn was known as the place you went for your anniversary or your birthday, and we're trying to really get away from that. We have two couples who we absolutely love because they come in at least once every single week, and that's pretty rare, but I think it shows like the good relationships that we're building with people.
Yeah, we just kind of want to say we're not just that special occasion restaurant. We're also an everyday restaurant. We want to keep it approachable to most people, and I think by me tweaking the menu a little bit more, I mean, you're not always getting the same thing there. You are, you know, because it's brand new every week almost.
That's great. Well, listeners, I want to thank you both for coming on.
It's been a pleasure.
And share your website again real quick. And are you on Facebook or anything like that?
We're on Facebook, yep. And we are at ColbyHillen.com.
ColbyHillen.com. Perfect. So wine dinners are on there. Listeners, if you want to join them once a month for wine dinners, your menus are up there. Mm-hmm. And
yep. We do recommend reservations because our seating is limited to 60 or so. And we do have nights where we get completely sold out.
Do you just have openings for Mother's Day?
We do. We're about half full at this point.
And join us for brunch every Sunday. We're open to the public, so please feel free to join us.
And brunch, you said 10:30 to
2:30? 10:30 to 2:30 every Sunday.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure.
You are listening to Food for Thought. We're going to go on a short break. When we come back, we have our very own MHP, our beer connoisseur.
Except he has a wine guy.
He has a wine guy with
him. So excited.
It's very cool. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse. It must be Thirsty Thursday because Food for Thought is about to pour you a liquid lunch with MHP Untapped. Hang out with us while we talk with brewers and beer movers and shakers, discuss New Hampshire beer culture and events, and answer calls to our studio live at 866-823-1077.
Love that intro.
It never does get old.
I say this every time I hear it. I always say I love watching Michael during that because it's just, it's awesome.
I do my best to get jiggy with it.
Yeah. I was getting jiggy with it too. I can't help but dance. So I'm so excited. I'm going to let Michael introduce who we have, but I think this is the first time ever.
I think it is.
First time ever we have wine samples instead of beer samples.
I might have had Michael from Moonlight Meadery on early. Oh, you did. Early. You did.
Oh, I don't think I was here that day then.
But today joining us, we have Joe McCarthy from Dunn Wine Brokers, who I met at Cask and Vine, I believe, the first time, hanging out with the crew over there.
I think
it
was.
They were here last week. Yes, they were. Yeah, and they did talk about Joe.
And I bumped into Joe at a couple of places. He represents a wine broker distributor that has some really cool, unique, not run-of-the-mill stuff. And he's actually brought some goodies in to share with us today.
Yes, I did. Hi, everybody. This is Joe McCarthy. I brought in three different wines. I think they're best representative of some of the wines that we bring in. And we think that... we try to bring in not the cheapest wine, but what we do bring in, we feel, is the best bang for your buck. These are wines that we really thoroughly enjoy drinking ourselves. I mean, because let's face it, at the end of the day, we're stuck with them whether you guys buy them or not.
so you want to enjoy them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, basically. I mean, we want to love them ourselves. So I brought in, let's see, Angel's Landing Cabernet Reserve out of Napa, California.
Cabernet, that's my...
Wine. That's my jam.
That is mine.
And following that, I also brought in a white oak Chardonnay, which is out of Russian River, a little subregion out of Sonoma County.
I like in California. That too.
And a big juicy Zinfandel, known
right
as Macchia.
There, that's me.
We sell out of this almost every tasting that we do. So
you're a heck of a listener, Joe. I got to tell you.
Did you tell him what we liked?
Well, you know, this is all for you guys.
All right, high five right here.
I know, really.
That's awesome. Wow. We're like, wow, how did you get so perfect with that?
Well, I listened last week, too, and I'm pretty in tune with listening to what people want. And I'm going to pass out some wines here. Maybe you guys can taste them and see what you think.
Yeah, just because we have favorites doesn't mean we can't taste all three.
So, Joe, how did you get... Have you always been in the wine business, or how did you get into the wine business?
Well, I was born pre-wine business, and it's really funny. I wasn't brought up in a household that really drank a lot of wine. As I was growing up, my mother would have a glass of wine. Hi, Mom, I hope you're listening. she would have a glass of wine and occasionally let me have a sip, and I've always liked grape juice, and I would taste different wines, and based on like a Merlot here or a Merlot there, they tasted different to me. And I started questioning why this Merlot tasted different than that other Merlot. And so it kind of piqued my interest. As time went on, I hit the age of 21, had no idea what I was doing, and I just started blind buying bottles, which can get really expensive, you know, especially if you have no rhyme or reason. There's not a lot of people in that young age category.
I was just going to say, 21 and you were buying wine like that? Like,
yeah,
you were interested.
You know, it's funny. I've acquired a taste for beer over time, but wine is something that I've always loved, and I've become very passionate about it, and you know, so I started asking questions. My wife, her family, we've been together a little over 10 years now. And her father kind of started getting me more into wine because he had some interesting stuff and kind of gave me a little bit of direction. And I started working for a small wine shop here in Manchester known as the Wine Studio, which is now closed. She's retired, unfortunately, and she's enjoying her retirement, I'm sure.
But that was a good store.
Yeah, it was a great store, and we had a great customer base. We loved everybody. We knew everybody that came in by name. And, you know, with all the distributors that would come in there, we got to really refine our tastes and what was, you know, what we really liked and what came from different regions. And when you're surrounded by it and you don't necessarily have to buy it out of pocket every day, it's easy to do that. So I started to refine a lot of my knowledge that way. I didn't take any formal schooling, but, you know, at this point, I kind of know picking up a bottle, looking at the grapes that are there, what region it's from, and the technique used, you kind of know what it's going to taste like. So what you guys have in your glass right now.
It's very good.
Yes, I was about to ask. Tell us about it.
So this is the Angel's Landing Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon out of Napa, California. The interesting thing with this is that they don't actually grow any of their own grapes. They do have a winery called Notarius that they do grow all themselves. But this is a higher-end juice sourced from a region of Napa, kind of near Stag's Leap. I don't know the exact region, but it's higher-end juice, and so it keeps their costs. This bottle is usually in the $30 to $35 range. It's got those big, rich, bold fruit flavors, tannic quality, good structure. This is something that I would probably pair with, like, I mean, I've got some Sopressata here, which may work, but probably, like, try some of this Gouda. I brought in some Holland-aged Gouda from, well, Holland.
You can tell by the wooden shoes.
That's good.
So this is what nice wine tastes like.
Yeah. Well, we hope. hope you enjoy it.
I'm glad you didn't ask how much it was for the box.
Right? You may want to be sitting down.
No, I meant like the box of wine, not like the case of wine.
I don't think it comes in a box.
You know, it's funny you say that, though. There's a lot of places throughout the world that sell boxed wine, and it's very good quality. It's just that Americans haven't really caught on, and we're not really there.
Very akin to what happened in the can packaging with craft beer, where there are still a lot of people who don't want to buy beer in cans, but the truth is it's better all around for the liquid.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with
that. It's a stigma thing. It's people think that it's their dad's beer that tastes like aluminum foil that comes
like
in a can.
Schlitz.
But
yeah.
You can't get Heady Topper in a bottle. You can't get Sip of Sunshine in a bottle. There's a reason. There's a lot of reasons, but it's just a good packaging solution, but it does have baggage kind of associated with it in some people's mind, kind of like the plastic cork issue that I think the wine industry is still fighting.
Mm-hmm. Well, that and screw tops.
Yeah, it's the same exact thing. It's
immediately
better for oxygen,
you think
it's
not.
For light.
Talk about screw tops.
Yes.
Well,
Joe.
Screw tops. Well, the thing with screw tops is they've come a long way from, let's see. They were originally non-breathing. They were just screw taps, just like your soda bottles are. They lock in everything. Everything is meant to drink within 5 years. It won't age past that. It's going to stay. What's gone on lately is they've removed corks, and especially Australia. They had a big boom in the wine industry, and they were getting corks from everywhere that they could get wine from or corks from, and they weren't always the best quality, so they were getting bacteria. And what happens with that, sometimes you'll get what's called a corked bottle. It's a type of bacteria that can infect your cork and therefore infect your wine. You open your bottle of wine, it'll smell like a musty basement, which is not a good quality you want in a bottle of wine. So distributors have to reimburse for those bottles when they get returned. So they were losing so much money, they said, you know what, we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to innovate the design. We're going to allow the corks to act the same way as the screw caps. and allow them to breed so you can actually age them. It's not uncommon now to find an Australian bottle valued at $200-$300 with a screw cap. I've seen it. I've tasted them. They're wonderful wines, and that's basically what's going on. So almost everything you'll get out of Australia now has gone to screw cap.
Wow. That's so good to hear, because you immediately think, like, I have seen some bottles of wine at the grocery store. Generally, they're less expensive if they're screwed cap, but sometimes there's a little, you know, some that are a little bit higher, and I'm like, okay, that's what you think. It's got a screw cap. It can't be good.
Look at Tracy over there with the cork.
She's doing pretty good. You think she does this all the time?
Right? Actually, you know what? I don't, because I have one of those ones that you pop in and it does all the work for you. I just know.
Do you know what mine is? Have you seen it on Facebook?
No.
Mine is a pink. It looks like a gun. It's odd, but you do the trigger and it.
Yep. Oh, that's my gosh. Mine goes so straight cool. on top. I do. You squeeze it. It goes down and then automatically takes it too.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's
so
cool.
I do the easy way.
I have fancy devices. I have an aerator. That's about it.
You know, I've actually gone so far as to get, I have an air system one, and it's just a long needle, and you insert it all the way through the cork, and it's good for older, drier corks that may come apart. If you have a bottle that's about 10 years old, they could fall apart as they dry out.
So you leave the cork in, and you just...
No, you insert the needle, and what happens, it uses air pressure from below. So you hit the button up top, it's like a cartridge, and it just pops a cork right out of the top, and you don't need the corkscrew, which could actually...
I opened a bottle of champagne this week, and it hit the ceiling. I was so careful, too. It went, boop, hit the ceiling.
It happens. It happens.
You'll put your eye Joe, what is your favorite kind of wine that you drink? Don't say all of them.
No. Currently, my favorite wines are definitely, I mean, kind of like what you're drinking right now. I like those big, bold, rich California Cabernet, the big, juicy... This right here, I compare with a steak. You want something with
it's
fat.
It's really good.
It's got good tannic structure, just something that will continue to develop in your mouth, you know, for hours. Well, maybe not hours, but minutes at least after you finish tasting it.
I like Joe.
I'm going to find him here in a month when I come back. It's like, I never left.
All right, what are we going to try next?
So the next wine we have for you guys is actually a white. And the reason I didn't pour the white first is the
acidity.
I
know, I was going to say, usually you're supposed to do that first, right?
Well, the problem with pouring the whites first is that they have a high acidity, so that kind of wrecks your palate, and you can't necessarily taste, you know, the red that you're going for, the full bold flavors. So the next one we have here is White Oak Chardonnay. This is one that you can actually find locally at Angela's Pasta and Cheese Shop here in Manchester. Great, I know they have them in stock, so I just stopped there this morning for some cheese.
That first cheese that you had us, that the Gouda.
So good.
Isn't that delicious?
It wasn't just Gouda, it was Grata.
It's something, it almost tastes like it has like Parmesan in it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
like
those, really it's a Holland aged Gouda. It's got some little hard pieces. I buy that at Angela's. That's the Chow Angelo. And you can definitely find that there almost every day until they sell out of it. And they may run out of it like toward the end of the week, and then they'll re-up on it. But that's been one of my favorite hard cheeses for a long time.
It's called Chow Angelo.
Yep.
I'm gonna go get some.
Yeah,
it's
so good.
I can't believe you've never been there.
I've never been there.
You've never been
there.
They
close early. I think they close at like 6, so it's tough to get to after work if you don't get out till 5 or 5:30. But it's homemade baked bread from not them, but other bakeries around the town, and it's usually a different bakery each day, different bread each day. They make their own pasta. They cut it to spec for you, so they'll have sheets of like 4 kinds.
It's
amazing. They do their sausage and their own sauces.
And apparently great cheeses.
And great cheeses and pate and wine.
The
and
deli case, caprese,
I gotta go.
Meatballs this big.
Oh, yum.
Oh, my gosh. And if you go on a Friday or Saturday and you look inside their kitchen, there's so many people in there.
Really?
It's like crazy how many people are cooking away. My niece used to work there.
All right, so what are we going to try with the Chardonnay?
What are we drinking now?
So what we're drinking is the White Oak Russian River Valley Chardonnay. This is a buttery, oaky, 100% French oak. It still retains a lot of that acidity up front. It's got good notes of citrus. This is going to be in your $25-ish range, give or take a dollar or two more based on where you go. I think Angela's has it at 27. Off the top of my head, I could be off by about a buck. But this pairs really well with like lobster. I've got some creamy cheese here. It's a French creamy cheese. It really pairs better with like Camembert or you know, a brie? Triple cream.
Yeah, I can taste that. Brie. I hear what you like. I can taste what you're saying by like buttery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a process of a secondary fermentation that gives it the buttery notes. Typically, it'll go through the first fermentation. Then they put it through a conversion called malolactic fermentation. You may have heard it. You may not have. And what that basically does, it converts the very sharp acidity into a lactic acid. So it goes from malic acid to lactic acid, which is much like what's in milk. So that'll give it more of the buttery quality versus that sharper. And unoaked Chardonnay will typically be a little bit sharper, A, because they're fermenting it in stainless steel, and B, they're not putting it through the malolactic, so it's better for, like, hotter days. This is more of like a spring, winter weight white. It goes really well with lobster, crab cakes. You know, it's just something you really want to serve some food with. So...
Carol, you all right over there?
She's batting something away. So what kind of cheese was this?
That is a French etorki, I think it is. It's sheep's milk cheese.
Oh, very good. So good.
I tried to get something that I could cut up and bring with me. So it's a little bit harder than I would have preferred to serve with this wine, but for transportation purposes.
We'll forgive you.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't notice the difference. Do we need one more break?
We do, and we're going to do that right now. You are listening to... Food for Thought with Carol and Tracy. We are in the house with MHP, Michael Helpley Pierce, and he brought in with him Joe McCarthy of Dunn Wine Brokers, and we're talking wine this week. So we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
I only have one.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol and Tracy.
Mystery solved.
We know what you were flying around.
See?
Batting.
We need to get rid of that.
Yeah, there's an open Litherman's bottle we thought was empty, but apparently it still has beer. It's been in here for a while.
Blame it on Little Miss Strange. I see how it is.
Yikes.
Guess that's got to go.
So we are in studio with MHP, Michael Helpley Pierce, Litherman's Brewery. We're going to get an update on Litherman's, and he brought in with him this week Joe McCarthy of Dunn Wine Brokers. So we're trying out different wines and pairing it with different cheeses. And I just love learning about all this different stuff. It's I just find it fascinating. It
Joe,
really
can
is.
You come back like every week? We can try new wines.
Might get a little dangerous.
So
we're trying
Michael,
my favorite.
Let's get an update on Litherman's.
Okay. We have a lot of really cool stuff happening.
And let's talk about, hold on. I know, sorry, interrupt.
There's a big announcement.
Huge announcement. I mean, huge, I was so happy when I saw that award. That was so cool. So go ahead. What did you get?
We got the editor's pick for New Hampshire Magazine for Best New Brewery in New Hampshire.
So
cool.
So I had to look at it to make sure I said that right. So we're super excited. This is not something that we really pushed people to vote or promoted much more heavily than a mention here or there and maybe a sign up in the brewery. So when we got the package, we actually thought it was just a magazine and opened it and realized that it was not just a magazine. It was like the award.
The announcement.
Yeah, so we're really excited.
Did you do a little jig?
Super cool. I actually got a text message. My partner, Doc Jones, and Dropkick, our assistant brewer, were at the brewery and texted me with a picture of it. And I was stopped at a traffic light, and I broke the law and looked at my phone at a traffic light. And I was like, no way!
So
really
awesome.
Cool.
So,
congratulations. So awesome. You guys have worked really, really hard for it. It's nice to see you being recognized.
Yeah. And kind of on the heels of that, we have a lot of other stuff coming on that I'll talk more about next month. But we are in the middle of working with the New Hampshire State Liquor Commission to bring on pints in conjunction with food, light fare food, but enough that you could come in and certainly have a full meal. I don't know that we would ever be a food destination, but you'll never regret that you ate there. That's kind of my goal. We're going to try for interesting but really simple stuff. We have some infrastructure limitations as to what we can prepare and how we can prepare it. But that's the first of many cool things coming down the pipeline from us, in addition to having quite a few new beers. I think we launched 4 new beers last month.
I don't know how you guys do that. Like, so many new beers. Like, you must, like, live, eat, sleep, and breathe beer science in your head.
We have house elves. No, right now, Doc Jones and Dropkick are at the brewery working their magic, and couldn't do it without them being so awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Well, good for you.
Well, congratulations.
This was a dream that you had, and, you know, you went for it, and look at you now. I mean, I remember just when you were talking about it.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you got an award, and it's very cool. Very cool.
Thank you, guys.
So, Joe, let's...
before we run out of time, our third wine.
Okay.
This is my favorite wine.
Well, before I forget, I just want to let the audience know that the Angel's Landing Napa Cabernet Sauvignon is for sale in Bedford and possibly Pembroke at the Whining Butcher locations. I told them that I would let people know that they could get them there. So I didn't want to forget before the segment's done. So the next wine we are tasting is...
He's never done radio before.
Macchia Mischievous. I listen to a lot of radio. So this is the Macchia Mischievous. This is one of our best-selling wines in the private sector. This is for sale at Harvest Market in Bedford. We may possibly put it on in Harvest Market out in Hollis at some point. They just went through a management change, so we'll see what happens.
Owner change.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not that up to date with everything. So
I know that. My assistant upstairs, her in-laws just sold it. But go ahead.
All right. So we've got the Macchia Mischievous, a big, juicy, jammy Zinfandel. It's fabulous. I recommend everybody try this stuff. You're into those big, bold, good tannic structure. You can also get this by the bottle at the Republic right up the street from us. I mean, I don't know what else I can give you. I'm running out of time, so I hope everybody enjoyed this segment.
What's your website?
www.dunnwines.com.
That's D-U-N-N,
D-U-N-N,
right?
D-U-N-N.
Okay.
And
wines.
Go on the events section. That'll tell everything that we have going on and upcoming, and I do update that from time to time as things happen.
Thank you,
Joel.
Well,
we enjoyed you a lot.
M-A-T-P.
Come back.
Always a pleasure.
And congratulations on your award. That is great, Lithemans Brewery. Kale and Company is up next, and we won't see you next week. It's the Red Sox. So we'll see you the following week. Bye, everybody.